How would you like to fire yourself and escape the rat race in 3 years or less? Bronson Hill will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Bronson is he is the managing member of Bronson Equity and general partner in 2,500 multifamily units worth over $250 million. And Bronson is the host of the Mailbox Money Show, where he breaks down the investor mindset and has personally raised over $50 million for real estate and his private equity deals. And he's the author of the best-selling book, Fire Yourself. Replace your working income with passive income in 3 years or less, and is a regular contributor to YouTube and his blog. So, Bronson, tell us about what does it mean to fire yourself and escape the rat race in 3 years or less, and what vehicle should someone use to get there?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu, mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Oh, I was, I think like a lot of people, I was working really hard, right? I was a well-paid professional. So I was doing a corporate job, and anybody who's ever worked corporate has felt that kind of soul crushing grind of being a number and having to produce. Where for me, it was sales. Other people might be different, you know, performance metrics and just feeling like, you know, every quarter I do well, my manager would give me a slap on the back and say, great job. And it'd be okay, now go do bigger and better next quarter. And it was this kind of grind of the rat race of just continuing the same thing again and again and again. And so I made the decision. This was, I think, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago now, where I was like, you know what? I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to figure out a way to leave my job within the next few years. And so I started looking into things regarding passive income. And I learned there's a lot of things out there that promise to be passive income, but they just take up more time. They create for yourself another job. And so one of the real secrets of passive income is to actually find something that you do a little bit of work to vet a deal, but you're not the one who actually does the work. You're not swinging a hammer. You're not managing a property. You're not doing an online trading strategy. You're basically finding a group or individuals that can help you grow your wealth over time. And so I was able to do this in about 3 years through different investing. I was able to raise some money. That was kind of one of the ways I found my way out, but learned about just, you know, ways to develop more cash flow and to be able to finally replace my working income with passive income in less than 3 years. So I'd love to talk more about that. But I think for a lot of people, they think it's really far off, but a lot of times it's just making a few small moves, changing their focus and taking massive action.
Thank you. Tell us the blueprint for someone to fire themselves. What kind of vehicles should someone use? Is it property or is it something else? Or is it a series of things that an entrepreneur should put in place to escape the rat race?
So I think the first thing before you figure out what vehicle you're going to use as far as, you know, investing, it's important to figure out what you really need. What are your goals, right? So the number one thing people I ask a lot of people is cash flow more important in your investing or is it long-term appreciation? And if you're somebody that wants to fire themselves, if you're an entrepreneur, maybe you're owned to the business or you're a corporate employee or a doctor or something, you've got to find something that produces cash flow because that's what allows you to cover your expenses every month. It covers expenses, you know, you have to pay for rent. You've got to pay for your housing if you own a house. You got to pay for a car, you got to pay for insurance, your kid's school, whatever it is. So you figure out what that number is, right? So for me, I was making over $200,000 a year. I had a great job, but I realized I didn't need to replace $200,000 a year. I needed to replace about $70,000 a year is really all I needed. I lived pretty simply, but it was enough for me to have a baseline of like, this is my, what we call our rat race number, right? With this number, I can basically live and have enough to be able to survive. And then anything above that would be gravy. But once you get to that number, you're free. So a lot of people think they have to chase this huge number to replace their income. But a lot of times it's actually a much lower number. So once you get that number figured out, like for me, like I said, it was $70,000 a year. I said, okay, well, how can I grow my passive income by $1,000 a month? Or what investments are actually going to help me get there? And at the time, real estate was producing a lot of cash flow. So I did some different real estate deals. I've been involved in buying different businesses. We do stuff in oil and gas now. We're doing stuff in debt funds or private equity. So there's different things out there that do this. And I think a lot of it can sound a little overwhelming at first, but it just really comes down figuring out what it is you want, what your goal is, and taking small steps to get there.
Thank you. For the listeners of this podcast, we have 7, 8, 9 figures, millionaires and beyond. And one interesting thing is like, There are entrepreneurs that, let's say, are making lots of money, but they don't have a lot of time to enjoy it. And there's others that simply are not making enough to actually, you know, make ends meet. So tell us about how the strategy would be different for those kind of groups of people that are, you know, making a lot of money, but just really don't have the time to enjoy it with their family. Or another group that perhaps are working really hard and they're still not seeing their family that much.
Yeah. This is actually my inspiration in starting and writing the book and just really going on this road. As I worked with a couple of physicians, I was in medical device sales. These guys were making $3 million a year each. Like, they were just crushing it. They were doing really well, but they were working every week, like 60 or 80 hours a week, and they couldn't take a vacation. It was very difficult, right? If they didn't go to work, they didn't get paid. So in a way, they were still a slave to the time for money trade, right? So for a lot of us, we have to put in the hours. We've got to go to work. Or if I have the business, if I sell it, what am I going to do? How am I going to make money, right? So this becomes a skill of learning about passive investing. And so that's, I guess, for people that have more money than they have time, it's getting started. Maybe it's putting $50,000 or $100,000 in one deal or a couple deals and kind of watching them and learning along the way. And there's ways to get involved in doing it. My book talks a lot about that. The other person is somebody who, kind of like myself, even though I had a good salary, I didn't have millions of dollars in the bank. I didn't have a lot of money saved. Right? I was still young. I didn't have a lot going. So I thought, well, what can I do to leverage my time? And so if you don't have, you know, there's a saying, it takes money to make money. But the truth is, it doesn't have to be your money, right? It can be somebody else's money, right? So Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad, he said it's selfish to only use your own money, right? So what I learned is, how can I use other people's money to be able to go do these other big real estate deals? And so for someone who doesn't have millions of dollars in the bank, it's fine. You can just basically find people, and you find them at local real estate meetups, you find them at conferences, you find them in your neighborhood, your network, and just find out people that are, maybe they have a business as well, and they're trying to figure out, what do I do now? How do I generate cash? And if you bring a deal that's a great deal and they have a good relationship with you, a lot of people say, well, I trust this person, the deal makes sense, let's try it, you know, because they're looking. A lot of people have a money problem, not that they don't have money. Of course, there's many people that don't have money, but there's people that have money, but they don't know how to invest it where they get cash flow, right? The stock market's very unpredictable. Doesn't really, even if you make a lot of, you know, paper gains in the stock market, you don't have cash that you can actually go and spend. So I think for people just to realize there's a couple different paths. It's figuring out kind of where you're starting and what would be the next step for you.
Thank you. Let's take the two groups. Let's take the group first that, let's say they're making anywhere between $100K and $1 million a year. And imagine they want to escape the rat race of basically not having enough time with their family. Tell us the 10 steps for these kind of entrepreneurs to feel free and amazing again.
I love it. So yeah, I don't know if I have 10 steps. I've got a few steps. I think the first one I mentioned was to discover what your number is, right? What is your rat race number? What's the number you need to be able to become financially free? There's three different stages of financial freedom. One is where you cover that rat race number, and then you can go to work, and basically you have the choice. You know, if your boss is mean to you, if you don't like, you know, working with your clients, you can choose, hey, do I want to keep doing this or do I not? Or if you are working, you're doing it by choice, right? And that's a huge shift once I've replaced my working income, or at least replace my living expenses with passive income. That was huge, right? Just the to know that I have the choice. A lot of us, most people in the US, like 50 to 70% of people are paycheck to paycheck. They do not have that choice, right? So that's the first and the hardest thing. Once you get there, then you can build on that into a place where you do replace your income. And I was able to do that as well. Very, you know, within those 3 years, I was able to replace my income. I was making more in real estate and other investing things than I was doing in my medical sales business. And then the last one really is that kind of life of your dreams. Like, what is the thing that you'd want? Is it, you know, flying on a jet? Is it owning a jet? Is it, you know, living this amazing lifestyle? You can do it. It basically just takes, you know, really intention to be able to get there. But I think it's important to identify what are the levels of financial freedom. And then once people have enough, Lily, a lot of times they start saying, well, what can I do that really is meaningful, right? I have enough for myself. I have enough for my family. I run this group called the Wealth Forum. And basically, it's a bunch of high net worth investors. They're like, how do I raise my kids so they're not spoiled, right? How do I teach my kids about money? How do I give money to causes that I believe in? And so I think once you have enough, I think it's important to be able to look back and say, you know, what can I do to help others that are in a less fortunate place? What can I do to leave the world in a better place than I found it? So I think that's a very simple kind of few-step way to be able to get there.
Thank you. Now let's take the group of investors that are making a million to 100 million dollars, and they also don't have a lot of time to spend with their family. Are there any changes versus the very first group that we talked about in terms of the strategy they would take in order to feel more free in their life?
Yeah, I think there's a concept called buying back your time, right? So the idea is you can make more money, but you can't make more time. The older people get, so if I'm 45, if I'm 85 years old, I have a friend who's actually 85 years old, he's worth over $500 million, right? So he really values his time because he realizes he doesn't have, 50 years left, right? He might have 5 years or 10 years or 15, we don't know, but it's like there's less time left than what he's already spent, right? So a lot of people that are older or have enough money, they'll look back and say, I really want to value my time more. So if you have more money, then you have time. I think it's important to take a step back and just figure out what's important, right? Because if you, if you had only, we don't know how long we're gonna live, right? Let's say you are 45 or 50 and you end up living 10 more years, unfortunately, like what do you want your life to look like? What are the experiences with your life, your family, your friends, your impact that you want to make? And so I think it's really important. I watch people that are very, very wealthy, and we run a group called the Wealth Forum, which we have a lot of wealthy people that join. And a lot of it comes down to just what are the things, the legacy that's really important to me? What are the things I want to make right? So I think that's where priorities and values come into play. So instead of then looking at replacing income and those kind of things, it's more about how can I just hire somebody to do this in my business? How can I hire somebody to manage my properties? How can I hire somebody to do all these things so that I can be free to do the things that really light me up? A lot of us have things that we do because we have to, but if there's things that we do that we'd actually pay to do these things, right? They're maybe work related, but it's like, oh my gosh, I get to actually interview people on a podcast, or I get to travel and I get to have the experience with my family, or I get to actually make a difference in my local community. Those are things I think that are really important. So I think it becomes really important. The wealthier you get, the more important it gets to just really focus in on what really lights you up.
Thank you. Tell us about what passive income opportunities do you recommend entrepreneurs to consider if they want to have a freedom lifestyle?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones for a lot of entrepreneurs and professionals is investments that, like we talked about, cash flow is really important, but also ones that really provide tax benefits. In California, I live in California, the federal tax rate, nationally in the US is 39%-ish, I believe. In California, they add another 13%. On top of that, if you're an earner that makes over $1 million a year, and then if you are self-employed, so if someone's like a doctor or has their own business, they're taxed another 15.3% on top of that, right? So you're almost 65%, which sounds crazy, but it's like, actually it's over 65%. So it's really crazy that this is there, but there are ways that you can reduce your taxes potentially to zero. Now, I'm not a CPA, I'm not giving any specific tax advice, but there's a chapter in my book that talks about how I reduced my income tax from 25% to about 1%, right? So I was making $200K a year, paying $50K a year in taxes, and I reduced it to about 1%, right? Well, how did I do that? And it wasn't that I was making less money, it's that I found ways to make money differently through other investment type of things. Or there's unique investments that are like oil and gas drilling or oil and gas investing that actually allow almost for a one-for-one deduction. So if I invest $100,000 in an oil and gas deal, it's around 80 to 90%, but $80,000 to $90,000 income reduction. So it would show that I made $80,000 to $90,000 less. And if my income tax is 25%, I would have saved over $20,000 just on the front end before I actually even got any return from the investment, right? So it's really amazing how there are investments like that exist. And so a lot of times people think something is too good to be true, but a lot of times it's just, doing the research. And now with ChatGPT, you can fact check anything very quickly. And anybody who just searches, how do I reduce my taxes with oil and gas investing? It's just amazing what's possible. So I've seen people have sold a business we're having an over $2 million tax bill, reduce it to $100,000 just by using some of these creative tax strategies.
Tell us more about other investing strategies that investors could leverage in order to maintain a freedom lifestyle while making big profits. Is property investing one of the strategies? And if so, what specific strategy within the property investing niche would you recommend?
Well, I think as an investor, there are great times to invest in different types of assets. about several years ago, it was really apartment buildings was really the place to be. The debt was really good. The cash flow was great. It's become much more difficult. The interest rates went up faster than they have in over 40 years, and it's pretty significantly affected the cash flow and the returns on a lot of these projects. Now, there are projects out there. They still can work. They're okay. Every deal is different. We like industrial-type projects. We're doing senior housing. We're doing other things in real estate. We have something called a debt fund. So instead of being an investor that's just like, hey, I'm buying a house and with debt and, or, you know, buying an apartment and seeing the upside, we basically become the bank and we do the lending, and we're seeing around a 10 to 15% return on those for, 1 to 3 year type terms, which is really good, right? 10 to 15% per year. And it's a lower risk position than a lot of other things. So I think, you know, properties of course can be great. It depends what kind of property, what kind of market. People ask sometimes, how's the real estate market? And the truth is the real estate market is not one market. It's many markets. It's, you know, are we talking in the city and the country, what state? Are we talking suburbs? Are we talking apartment buildings, single family houses? The single family house market and the multifamily house market has been completely different, right? We've seen property values in multifamily go down by 20 to 40% over the last few years. And we've seen, you know, single family just continue to steadily rise. And so why is that? A lot of it has to do with debt and other things and having these long fixed rates on these 30-year mortgages. So I think there's many things you can do. I think it just really depends on what someone's goals are. And again, for 2026, we love senior housing. We love industrial. We love debt fund type products that are first position. That just means they're in a safer position. And then, we're always looking, like I said, oil and gas and other types of unique tax strategies.
Thank you. Tell us about the psychology of successful investors. Since you always talk about the mindset of investors, what differentiates those investors that remain successful for a long period of time and those that fail on large projects because of perhaps some risk-taking that they didn't do full due diligence on, or some other aspects that you may tell us? Tell us a few steps of regarding the psychology of successful investors.
Well, I think in general, it's really important to realize that investing is psychology. And Warren Buffett, our most successful investor of our generation, he once said, he was asked, what's the most important trait of successful investors? And he said the number one trait was actually, wasn't intellect or IQ or skill or something. He said the number one thing is temperament. I think what he was saying is that it's the ability to wait and not buy when everybody's getting in. It's the ability, he talks about it being fearful when others are being greedy. So when you see things are overheated, when it's really hard though, when everybody's making money and you're on the sidelines and you're like, I should get in and do this too, right? Because you want to make the money. But the problem is, from a psychology standpoint, we typically are buying when things are high. And then when things go down, we panic and we sell. That's true. That's typically how most people respond. And so we have to have this kind of contrarian approach, where when everybody is going out of an asset or it's completely out of favor, then we're willing to go in, right? And he describes it this way as well, is that it's almost like you're standing at a batter's box in a baseball game, and it's not just you get three strikes. You have as many pitches go by as you want, and then when the right one comes around, you can take your swing and hit it, right? So you don't have to like swing at anything. You just wait for the one that you feel is right for you, and then you hit it. So I think it's being patient, it's waiting for the right thing, and then it's also looking at the psychology. If your Uber driver is giving you tips about a certain stock or a crypto or other things, maybe it's time to like, okay, maybe don't buy it, right? Because everybody's excited, everybody's talking about it, versus when something is out of favor and yet you see it as an opportunity, it could be a great time to get into it.
Good. Tell us what else you'd like entrepreneurs to know about firing themselves and escaping the rat race.
Yeah, so I think this is the biggest thing. A lot of people that I know, I worked with a lot of physicians for years, and a lot of people, we can enjoy our jobs, we can love what we do, but there could come a point where, God forbid, we become disabled, a family member becomes disabled, we have a midlife crisis, we want to be able to have time off. And if we don't have the freedom of time, we're not going to be able to take that time off. And it can be, we think we have all these choices, but we're very dependent on how we feel, how things are going, or maybe an outside situation at work or the business opportunities. And so this is where it's so important to, as you're working in your job or in your business, that you're developing this muscle. And it is like a muscle. right? It's like going to the gym and getting a great workout and you're like, I didn't even know I had that muscle there, that little muscle in the back or whatever. It's like, that's what that is, this passive investing muscle that you learn to flex. And so it starts by investing in one deal, doing some research, figuring out what would be a good opportunity, investing in it. And regardless of how it goes, you know, usually it will go fine. But even if it doesn't go as well, you'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot as you do it. And so I feel that in general, the best investment you make is in your own education. It's in your own learning. And then a lot of people get stuck there. They don't actually take the actions. But I think when you actually start taking action, that's when you really start to learn. You really start to figure out kind of what's next. So I think for everybody, it starts with learning. It starts with making a goal. It starts with action and just getting involved and saying, hey, I want to do something a little different so that I'm not just having to do X for the next 20 years, 10 years, 30 years, right? I want to start putting money in these other things that will create multiple streams of income for me.
Thank you. Tell us three case studies of entrepreneurs you've worked with where they've implemented the fire yourself system that you've created. And how did that work out in their business? What are they now able to do? How much more profitable were they? How much more time with their families did they get? Like, what are some results that they've had?
Right. So what does it mean to fire yourself, right? I think of a guy, Nick, who is a part of our Wealth Forum group, who basically had a job, was an engineering manager, making really good money. He was traveling quite a bit. He didn't like the pace of it. He didn't like the grind. He wanted to spend more time with family. And he created a plan for himself. I'm going to invest in these specific deals. I need to generate this amount of income. And I want to grow so that I don't have to work in this way, right? I can do what I want to do. And so he was able to fire himself. He was able to leave his job. And then he was able to create something that he wanted to create. Like, I think it's a tragedy. Over 70% of people say they don't like their jobs. They don't like what they do. And part of it is they don't have autonomy. They don't have the ability to create. But a lot of times it can just be a grind. It can be a sense of like, I'm here, I'm a number. And especially with some of the stuff coming down with AI, we don't know if jobs will be there in the future, right? So I think it's really important over the next 3 to 5 years, all of us start creating these different ideas of how do I create value in my life and the lives of others? How do I create value through investing in the world? And again, you can't AI away something like real estate, right? You can't AI away an oil and gas deal, right? These are things that people need. They need to be able to drive their cars. They need to be able to, you know, there's no technology that shows, you know, people don't need a place to live, a roof over their head, or a bed to sleep in, right? So these are things that are really, really important. So I think just like Nick, I mean, I think it's so important to figure out what you want once you see the opportunity, and then to be able to kind of just continually work towards the goal of generating more and more passive income to where now work is optional.
Thank you. Tell us some other case studies of entrepreneurs you've worked with where they've escaped the rat race, and what were the inspiring results that they've had?
Yeah, so I think of a guy that I actually met, I hosted a conference a couple years ago in LA, and so he had read my book on the plane, he read Fire Yourself, and he basically was in tears because he realized, I'm not in a place where I'm free. I thought I was doing really well financially, but I just realized I'm one sickness, one child issue, one something away of just not being able to have the freedom in the way that I want. And so he really took massive action over the next 2 years of saying, I'm going to get started. I'm going to go to more conferences. I'm going to start investing more. I'm going to start to develop my cash flow. I'm going to try to find, and it wasn't that things went perfectly. You're never going to do things perfectly. Investing is inherently risky. So there can be things that don't go well. But as you learn, as you grow, he was able to cover his income and be able to leave his job, or at least work into something that for him was a more comfortable way of working, right? It was not dependent on him. And I think even as an entrepreneur, the lesson here too is that if everything is dependent on me making all the decisions, then I don't have a great business, right? The goal, as Michael Gerber would say, you know, from the book, The E-Myth, is you shouldn't be working in your business. You should be working on your business, right? So that your business can potentially function without you. A great business is one where you go on vacation, you come back and there's way more sales and it's grown a lot because you weren't there, right? Because your team is empowered or the systems and processes are in place to be able to help grow that business. And so I think, for all of us, it's just important to, you know, especially the business owners, to say, what can I do to grow and scale without it taking, without my business taking up more of my time?
Thank you. What are the biggest breakthroughs entrepreneurs reading your book have had?
Biggest breakthroughs people have had, I think for a lot of people, it's there's a lot of new information. It's like, okay, I, you know, this book was really written for the person who says, yes, I want to do something different than the stock market. The problem with the stock market is it's inherently volatile. It's inherently risky. Historically, they've had, you know, crashes of up to 90% of the value in a short period of time. You know, there's just been so much about, and you can't really generate cash flow. It's very, unless you have dividend stocks, it's very hard to actually generate money that, you know, stuff that's put money in your pocket each month. And so I think that, you know, just finding out, hey, I want to do things that are different. I know people, a lot of us know people that have done things in real estate. They've done things in other areas in business. And I want to be someone who does that. So I think just the idea of like, well, what's out there? What are the different asset classes out there? So we talk about investing in car washes and real estate, different assets of real estate, debt funds, and how do you analyze any deal? How do you analyze when you see a deal? Because a lot of times you'll get a deal and it's like, well, how do I know if this is a good deal or it's not a good deal, right? And so you just developing those skills and learning that, hey, I understand over time, like this is actually what I'm really looking for, and I want to stay away from anything that's similar to these other things. And then, you know, as you, the longer you do this, the more you talk to people that have done it for a long time, you'll start to be able to identify what a great deal is and how to avoid ones that aren't going to be good for you. So I think that, you know, it's more of kind of an introduction of, okay, I want to do this. How do I get from, I'm a real estate mogul and I've got, you know, millions of dollars coming in, and, you know, we've got people like that in our group. And well, how did they get there? Most people are self-made. They didn't inherit it, right? So they did certain things to be able to position themselves to be in that place. And it doesn't happen overnight. It typically happens over a 3 to 5 to 10 year type of process, right? So I think it's learning, it's taking the actions, it's one step at a time, and just continuing to develop yourself.
Thank you. What are the best deals for investing that most entrepreneurs never think about, but you consider to be great deals because they can be passive and they can provide a good return on investment? And yes, I understand things change all the time, but tell us some of your most successful investing deals that you could say were successful, at least for you and for your clients.
Yeah, so we talk about out of favor assets. So I'm an investor. So I've been a real estate investor. I've invested in all types of different things, you know, crypto and precious metals and all kinds of, you know, businesses and things. And so I just love finding great deals. I've always been kind of a deal guy. It's like great, you know, if you love to shop and it's like you go shop, find something 50% off. It's like, well, that's amazing. I love this thing and it was 50% off, right? Whether it's clothing or whatever it is. And so years ago, I bought a bunch of precious metals. This was probably 5-6 years ago, and all this stuff has gone up 3 to 5x where it was, right? Which is great. Now it's volatile, things can change, but you know, I look at that as that's a store of wealth. And so again, there are certain times where certain investments make a lot of sense. And so it's hard, you know, and it's dynamic. It's almost as if you're playing a board game, Lily, and every day you look at it, it looks a little bit different, right? Because the pieces have moved or the rules have slightly changed. And so that's how finance is. And even, you know, Tony Robbins calls it, it's like a game. A lot of these people that run huge, huge funds that, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, they'll say, this is like a game, right? So it's just like, how do you play this game in a way that you can win? How do you play it? You don't have to play it. There's many, many ways you can play it. The goals are the same, right? To grow wealth, get cash flow, to increase your freedom, those kind of things. But there's the ways you can play it are many. And so for me, some of the best deals we've done, we've had a multifamily deal we did years ago, probably 5 years ago, where we've been, a number of them did very well, exited one of them. We bought for $27 million, obviously using debt. And then 10 months later, it was worth $37 million. So we had almost 100% return on our equity in 10 months. Now that was more lucky than good, right? It's better to be lucky than good, right? It was just the timing was really great. And somebody, the market just picked up and somebody made a great offer. And we're like, hey, everything's for sale at the right price. So that stuff happens. So again, sometimes you just position yourself in a way where you're going after things that you see value and you have maybe multiple different exit possibilities. And you're just, you know, you're on the bus. You're saying, hey, I believe where we're going. And whether we, you know, stop at the next stop or we go for another number of years, like it's okay, because I'm actually really comfortable being a part of this deal with this operation group. So again, it's hard to give one specific, I mean, there's a couple examples, but it's hard to give one specific example.
Thank you. Do you recommend entrepreneurs to invest in multifamily units right now, or is that not a good time?
I don't think it's, I mean, I will say this. I think it's not a bad time to invest in multifamily. I think because if somebody has been a multifamily or apartment investor over the last 5 years, the last 3 years, I mean, it was really good. I'd say from 2010 to about 2022, it was really good, or 21 was really good. And then, you know, the rates started rising 2022, and it just really made a lot of the cash flow be pinched. So what happened is costs went way up on financing, costs went up on insurance and labor and different things, but the rents rents didn't necessarily go up. So what happens is just when you were cash flowing really well, now you're not cash flowing. A lot of these valuations have come down. So I don't think it's a bad time. I think there are some great deals out there. I just think you have to be patient, find the right ones, and then realize, hey, this may not cash flow, and it's more of a long-term type of play. It could take 3 to 5 years, could take a little longer for it to actually start to mature and start paying more cash flow. But I think there's always opportunities in every market. It just depends kind of what your goals are.
Thank you. How great is the opportunity of buying businesses as a way to make a passive income?
Yeah, so I think right now one of the best opportunities we have is that there are 10,000 boomers that are retiring every day. Right? It's hard to believe that's true. And a lot of these people, and this is from all, whether they own businesses or they're employees, but a lot of those, a little around 10%, maybe own a business, right? So this is, could be 1,000 people a day in the country that are leaving. And most of these businesses are small businesses. And a lot of them have no plans for succession. There's no, like, what do I even do? So I've actually thought about this too. I'm always kind of trying to think of new ideas, but wherever you live, you know, as a listener, it's like, do I live in a place where I could just go around locally to laundromats and home care agencies and just start making some calls and shaking some trees of, hey, who owns some of these things, right? Could I actually be someone who could buy, or could you know, maybe say, I don't have money to buy from this person. But for a lot of people, they don't necessarily want money. They want to be able to transition and know the business is continuing on. And a lot of times they will do an owner finance where they'll say, you can pay me over the next 2-3 years from the profits, right? So that's what's really amazing, is I think it's an incredible opportunity. I think to be a passive investor, it's a little harder. Certain businesses allow for it, especially if it's a business of a certain size. I think if it generates $500,000 in profit per year, it can be a little more passive because you can hire people to kind of help with it. I think if it's truly a small business that makes $100,000 in cash flow per year, it's harder to say, hey, this is going to be fully passive, because typically someone's working in the business. And if it's that small, it may be you, right? So you just have to ask yourself, is this really scalable? Is it something that I can hire somebody to be in there and actually still makes money? So I think those are things to look at. But I love, you know, the idea of buying businesses, and especially ones that are large enough that you can have a manager in the business so that you don't have to be in the business yourself working it.
Thank you. For entrepreneurs considering buying businesses, is there any way to ensure that you're actually never going to put a foot in there? As in, like, actually, it's going to be a truly passive business. You did mention a few things now, but are there any other considerations that investors should consider?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because, you know, for a lot of people that are entrepreneurs, we're always, you know, we can get shiny object syndrome and think, oh, I should do this, I should do that, I like e-commerce, I should do laundromat, I should do that. You know, and there's so many things we can do, right? Our eyes are bigger than our stomach, Lily. We can see so much opportunity. And so the challenge is, you know, if I work in IT, you know, maybe an IT related business could be a great business. Just any, you know, maybe if I work, there are IT businesses where I do network, you know, network developing. So I help connect computers and sell systems and whatever. Well, maybe that would be a good adjacent business. Could be selling some sort of software as a service business, right? So there are things that maybe are kind of related to it. It's hard though sometimes to go into something completely new. And I think what can make it more passive, honestly, like I said, is scale, right? If you own a laundromat and there's 10 different, you know, washer dryers in there, that's a pretty small laundromat, right? But if you have another one that's got 100 in there or something, and it generates, you know, $1,000 a day in profit or something, you're like, wow, there's actually some money there to be able to do something with, right? So I think it's really important to look at and just say, how much money does it actually make? And I see a lot of times where, like, you'll see these, just as they sell real estate, there'll be real estate listings. There are business brokers that list businesses. And there are some businesses that are great businesses, and there's some businesses that are absolutely terrible businesses. They lose money, right? You buy this restaurant and you're probably going to lose money, right? So if you have extra money, you just throw it in there, it's fine, but you're paying to basically own a business. Versus other businesses that are not sexy, right? Just super, maybe they pick up trash or they're a cleaning company or something, but they make a lot of money, right? So sometimes the less sexy a business is, the less exciting it is, the more cash flow it can make. So I think that's something to consider when you're looking, is just how much cash does it actually make? And you know, is it something that requires me to be in the business all the time?
Thank you. I have a friend, and he told me he only works 5 hours a week. And at the time of asking, he was making like £52,000 per month, which is about, I think, $60,000. And I think most people that could be enough to live. And I'm wondering what kind of systems and processes should an entrepreneur put in place to make sure that they're working, if not, if not getting themselves out of the business fully, at least to reduce their time of working to 5 to 10 hours per week?
How do you reduce your time in the business? I think it's a great question. There's a guy named Dan Sullivan. I was a part of a mastermind of his called Strategic Coach, and he would use this term about a self-managing company, right? So how do you have a company that basically manages itself? Hopefully you can grow the business. Like, keep talking about size. Once you can grow it to a certain size, it has to do with not how many employees, but how much cash flow, right? So we have a pretty lean business, but we raise millions of dollars every year, and we do really well, right? But we only have two full-time employees, we have a few part-time, and we have some overseas, right? So we don't have a big, we don't have a lot of people, a big overhead, but I'd rather have a smaller size business as far as employees and be more profitable, have a much higher profit margin, have a more profitable business than to do it differently. So if you're looking at scaling, I mean, there's a great book, like as I mentioned before, this concept of Buy Back Your Time. That's the name of the book. It's called Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. And it's kind of similar to Fire Yourself. How do you create systems and processes in your business so that you can actually step away from it? And one thing we do is there's this idea of teach it once, and then you can actually never have to do it again, right? So if I learn how to do something, I can teach it. I can create a Loom video, which is an app that I can record my screen of, you know, here's how you send an email for Bronson, or here's how you do this certain thing in the business. Here's how you reach out to contact an investor. And so we'll do all that. We'll basically create these repeatable processes in a video, a screenshot, some text as well, checklists. And then if somebody's new, or we give that process to someone else, they can watch that video, they can look at the process, and they can learn it, right? So I don't have to teach it again, right? I may have little things to teach, but in general, we try to document all that stuff. So I think that stuff is really powerful. And so I think you can do that not just in your business, but you can do it in other areas of your life as well. I've done it with babysitters. Like if you have a babysitter and you've got, this is the process with my daughter, and here's where you pick her up, and here's how you get in the house, and here's the timing, the schedule, and here's how you take care of the dog. And you can put all this stuff in there. And then what it does is it allows you to basically have a process for things. And that's how people become more free, as they create processes and they teach them to other people. And other people now with AI, some AI can do some of these processes for you too.
Thank you. Are there any specific apps that you use in order to record these processes? The reason I ask you this is you did mention Loom, but I noticed in social media, there was one app that was something like recording the screen as you are doing tasks, and then it would come up with the exact step-by-step system of how you did something. And I find that is quite interesting, because then it's not exactly like Loom, because let's say if you were to do something else in between and so on, it would only kind of like focus on the tasks that have to be done. So almost like an A to B and C and so on. And, when you're doing something with Loom, yeah, you could do it in the way that you would normally do it. Perhaps you don't have the actual, I'm not sure if I'm making any sense right now, actually. So I'm wondering about what, kind of other apps or, tools or AI tools would you recommend to put in place so someone can fire themselves, in their business?
Yeah, so I think there's different ways. I think that's a great question for ChatGPT. If you're not using ChatGPT in your business, I use it all the time. I used to use Google for things, and you have to research things. Well, ChatGPT just distills it down. So you could like literally ask that question and it will tell you exactly, here are the things that are working. We used one for a while called Tango, which would do kind of, you do a process, it would kind of create the process for you as you did it. So Tango along with Loom can work. I don't think it has to be super fancy. I think sometimes the more fancy it is, or the more gadgetry it is, it can feel a little intimidating for people. Loom is like, it's like, you know, Dan Martell calls it the camcorder method, right? Where you're just like, almost as if you're recording the screen, do this, click here, whatever. And it just like walks you through the whole thing. So I think it can be pretty simple. And I think that especially with virtual assistants, we've hired some virtual assistants overseas to do pretty high level tasks for us. And this is how we train them, is we teach them their A players, and they're really important to what we're doing. And we basically walk through these processes and have them watch the videos. And so I think it's really just creating, you know, how can you automate what you're doing? You know, we think we're the only ones that can sell a customer on something, but probably not, right? There's ways you can do it probably without you. We think we're the only ones that can do certain things when really anybody on the team can do it, right? So a lot of times it's just getting ourselves to like realize, hey, you know, maybe I'm not the most talented one here, but I could actually be the bottleneck, or I could actually be the one that's preventing growth because I feel like I've got to do everything. And so once I realized that a few years ago, I was like, man, I want to try to like, is it possible for me to make way more money in the business and work way less? So I have a goal of, you know, working, like taking 150 days off a year, traveling at least 4 to 6 times internationally, doing a lot of personal goals and things, because I think that's really, really important. And I think it's absolutely possible. And so as a business owner, you have the ability to create these systems and processes by just, you know, trying to think about it and just putting them into practice.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs and investors can connect with you in order to discover the latest investment opportunities or more about your opinion on the psychology of successful investors.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, the best way I think to connect is I've got a giveaway for your audience. It's my three favorite investments in 2026. I mentioned a few of them here, but it distills it down and just talks through kind of the psychology behind it and how it can really help entrepreneurs. And so if you text the word cash flow, just all one word, text the word cash flow to the number 33777. So you just text 33777, the word cash flow, all one word. It will send you that guide. It'll ask for your email and your name, and it'll basically update you on our future opportunities. We're always doing new investment deals, so I'd love to connect with anybody about investing as well. So thanks so much, Lily.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.